policy. Joining us, Sal Nuzzo, the Vice President Policy Director for the Center for Economic Prosperity at the James Madison Institute. You may follow him at Sal Nuzzo on Twitter. Sal, thank you for taking time with us.
Well, thanks for having me. And quite simply, my thoughts on Amendment 2 are it's really an economic wasteland in sheep's clothing. It would devastate jobs in Florida. It would really import the worst elements of places like San Francisco, Seattle, and Chicago to the entire state. And at a time when we're struggling to recover from the effects of the COVID pandemic, it would completely cripple Florida's economy. So that, in a nutshell, are my thoughts on the amendment as a whole. It would be a bad idea in a good economic climate. In the present economic climate, it's even a worse idea.
Yeah, I spoke with Florida Tax Watch last week, and they echoed similar thoughts. When they broke it down from a taxpayer standpoint, they actually said that it would be worst for those that are at the lowest end of the socioeconomic scale. Do you share that mindset?
Absolutely, 100%. The amendment, if enacted, would hurt those it purports to help the most. And it would destroy small businesses across the state. And small businesses are two-thirds of Florida's job creators. All two-thirds of all Florida jobs are made by small businesses. So if you can imagine an economy in which Florida is actually losing 175,000 to 200,000 jobs, all from the lower ends of the wage spectrum, that would be the effect of this amendment if it were to pass.
When you lay something out like that, it is just common sense. Why is it that you think that we're even seeing in polling that came out yesterday, potentially two-thirds of Floridians are on board with this idea? Why is it that a vast majority of people can somehow or another think this makes sense?
Well, because the proponents of the amendment have largely framed this in a way that might appeal to folks. So, you know, we should be for Floridians earning more. It'll be phased in for multiple years. People need a living wage. The challenge with those arguments is that they fly in the face of the reality of what actually happens when you effectively double the minimum wage in a place like Florida or anywhere for that matter. And the evidence comes from places like San Francisco and Seattle and Washington, D.C. and Chicago. When those jurisdictions went with a $15 minimum wage, they lost jobs, they increased poverty, people lost their livelihoods, and businesses either shut down completely or moved out of the areas in which they were previously. So it is on its just in totality, it's a terrible idea for the state of Florida, especially at this time.
I think it's understandable as soon as you have a level of understanding presented to an individual, and even independent of the earning side, you know, the average person, you know, if you ask them, hey, do you want to pay literally double what you're paying right now if you go through the drive-through? Of course, they're going to say no. But how else could you sustain essentially double the wages for similar type of positions if we didn't have an offset in product costs? Why is it that you think most people don't understand some of these basic economic concepts?
Well, again, I think it's something where the folks who are trying to kind of support this are framing it in a way that's just a touch misleading. So even when you look at prices, you know, some big businesses may be able to absorb that, and some big businesses are even already paying $15 minimum wage. You know what we say? That's great. That's the free market. But when you look at small businesses in this state, it's actually an exponential increase, because a $15 minimum wage would actually increase payroll costs for those small businesses by as much as 75 or 77%. Those are huge, huge numbers. Now, if you then go down to the to kind of the customer side when prices go up, and you think about the fact that Florida is an economy that has a large number of retirees on fixed incomes, those people are not going to be able to afford the price increases. And consequently, the economy is going to be devastated here if this goes through.
Speaking with Sal Nuzzo from the James Madison Institute about the proposed Florida Amendment 2, when we take a look at you know, the concept as a whole, you mentioned that it's often done through messaging, the misleading. The other element that comes into play that I feel like those of us who understand business, free enterprise, and what's made this country great, the idea of a living wage is a false premise, in that minimum wage jobs are not designed to be careers. They are designed to provide people with an opportunity to access the labor market, to gain skills, and then to become more valuable. Virtually every person in the workforce has attained that. We've seen that historically, those on minimum wage sub 2% of the population. Why, therefore, do you think it is that we can't permeate to a greater degree those individuals to think that it's a really bad idea to potentially eliminate those entry-level jobs?
Well, and you're exactly right. The current minimum wage is a starting wage. The majority, vast majority of people earning that wage are teens and young adults who are able to gain experience, learn skills in a field, doing a job earning, you know, $8.50, $9 an hour. Now, what is being done is you've got folks on that are kind of proposing or supporters of this amendment who are kind of trotting out a single case of an individual person that's been trying to make a living on this who's not one of those, you know, kind of age bracket, you know, of the majority. And so it kind of tugs on the heartstrings. It makes an emotional appeal. But when you look at the actual reality of what's going to happen, especially in the hospitality industry, because tipped workers will have the $15 minimum wage applied to them, you're going to have tons of restaurants being unable to affect their business models, and they're going to end up shutting down. As you mentioned, the current minimum wage is only meant to be a starting wage, mostly for the young and kind of young adults as they gain experience, and that's really what's going to be upended in this.
Yeah, it started with this company earning $4.25 an hour back in the 90s. A little bit's changed since then. That's the way that the American free enterprise system is supposed to work. So you take a look at the impact of unions. This has been one of the understated facets of the disinformation machine pertaining to minimum wage right along. Describe for a moment union contracts that might contain increases for those who aren't even earning minimum wage, and why so many unions get behind the raising of the minimum wage.
Well, the majority of collective bargaining agreements, and remember, Florida's a right-to-work state, but that doesn't mean that we don't have unions in the state. It just means you're not required to join them. But the union kind of infrastructure in the state absolutely wants to see this enacted, because then they can make the argument in their collective bargaining agreements, whether they're in a private sector union or a public sector union, that because the minimum floor now is $15, that all of their workers that may have been earning $14 or $15 or $16 an hour should now be bumped up to $20 or $22 an hour to account for, you know, it's a term called salary compression. So they're behind the wage amendment because they want to see their workers go from 15 to 20 or 25, and in the end, everybody in Florida is hurt by this. That is the main takeaway. Amendment 2 just hurts the entire state across the board.
And to Sal's point, you even have some unions that get an automatic kick in their contract if the minimum wage increases. Sal, thank you very much for the explanation, the economic understanding, and continue to fight the good fight.
Thanks a lot. It's a pleasure to be with you. Anytime you want me back, I'm happy to do it.
All right, be right back here on the Brian Mudd Show, News Radio 610.